In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
This is D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution here with the 211th episode of the Bowtie Chronicles podcast. Everything you need to know about the Atlanta Falcons. In this episode, we're going to take a look at the upcoming opponent, the Dallas Cowboys, who are also off to an 0-1 start. We have a very special guest to help us break down the Cowboys and Clarence Hill of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We're going to then look at the Falcons who are on their new teams and what they did in week one, and then discuss some more of the Falcons versus the Cowboys. Mike Nolan is the DC there, and go over a few highlights coming up on Sunday, and then we'll hear from offensive coordinator Dirk Koetter on analytics and going for it on fourth down. But without further ado, let's get to my good friend, longtime Cowboys beat writer, Clarence Hill, University of Texas, Omega Sci-Fi Fraternity Incorporated, frat brother also.
All right, here with Clarence Hill of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, for a special guest appearance on the Bowtie Chronicles podcast. How you doing, Clarence?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Doing great. How many years you been covering the Cowboys?
24 years on the Cowboys.
All right. Yep.
And so, I think four playoff wins.
I was getting ready to get to that, but I really can't talk here. We, after the Super Bowl debacle, but let's get to the game. Let's preview the game. I saw it Sunday night. Looked like, everybody looked a little bit disjointed this week, but the pass rush, you could see that. You could see C.D. Lamb. What were some of your first impressions of the Cowboys on offense? And then we'll switch over to defense.
I mean, you saw the potential with the receivers, with C.D. Lamb and Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup, and certainly Zeke is the player everybody expected to be the player he's been, and he's been a big part of the Cowboys' success. Dak Prescott was very effective in the first half, and he looked good. He was efficient. He spread the ball out to seven different receivers. The bottom line is they were inefficient. It was, at the end of the day, it was empty numbers for all of them. They scored just 17 points for all this firepower. They scored just 17 points. They only took one shot downfield. And they didn't get it done, this is a team that has to win on offense. That's where all the stars are. That's where they spent their money. The calling card in this team was their offense. They're the number one offense yardage-wise in the league last year. But again, the Cowboys failed to get it done in a close game when it mattered most against a team with a winning record. Dating back to last year, the Cowboys are 1-9 in games that are 3 points or less.
Go down the line for us. How's the line shaping up?
The line is the line. I mean, the Cowboys, certainly we all know that they got left tackle Tyron Smith, who's going to be a Hall of Famer, right guard Zach Martin, who's made all pro every year, been in the league, and he's on his way to Hall of Fame as well. Center Joe Looney is replacing Travis Frederick, a five-time pro bowler, and he's a lifetime backup who's starting pretty much, and so that's a weak link, as well as left guard, continues to be a weak link for the Cowboys, and Connor Williams, and right tackle right now is mystery me for the Cowboys. Their top line right tackle, Al Collins, who actually was their best offensive lineman last year, is out on injured reserve for at least three games with a bad hip. And he's been replaced by undrafted rookie free agent Terrence Steele. Cam Irving, the free agent signee, was signed to be the swing tackle, started slow Cleveland camp, he was awfully got beat out by Terrence Steele to start in front of Irving. I mean, to start in place of Collins. And then Cam Irving got hurt in the game, and he's going to be out for a while. So that they have a rookie undrafted free agent at right tackle.
Mm-hmm. And going over to defense, DeMarcus Lawrence and Everson Griffith look like they could be a problem for the Falcons. How does that front, shape up? I know you got problems at linebacker with Van Der Esch out.
Well, the front didn't really get the job done against the Rams. They just had one sack. That was by Aldis Smith. The Rams got the ball out quick, which kind of mitigated the pass rush, but the Cowboys believe was the strength of that defense with Aldis Smith and DeMarcus Lawrence and Everson Griffin. They really didn't get a chance to gap the quarterback of the Rams for getting the ball out quick. They was also running the ball pretty well and pretty effective. They didn't be the long runs, but they had a lot of steady runs up the middle of that defense. So, I think the Falcons are a different team. They like to throw the ball deeper down the field. It should give the Cowboys a chance to get after the quarterback and get to the quarterback. But in this game, they really didn't get there. Aldis Smith, though, here's a guy who hasn't played since 2015. He does not look like he had any rust. He was the Cowboys' best defensive player. He had 11 tackles. He had a quarterback hit that led to interception. He had a sack. He was all over the place. He dominated at times. He's going to be a problem.
And the secondary, what's going on back there?
Well, the secondary is, a lot of young players, you got a rookie corner in Trayvon Diggs, you got Cheeto Woozy on the other side, you got Andre Brown as the slot corner, and safety, you got Xavier Woods and Darian Thompson who's starting for the first time. Darian Thompson beat out High Clinton Dixon, one of the key free agent signees, and obviously the High Clinton Dixon was a first round pick from Alabama guy who had experience with McCarthy going back to Green Bay, but he was awful in camp. He got beat out by Darian Thompson, and he was cut. And, there was so much talk about the Cowboys maybe going after Earl Thomas. They didn't do that. They're sticking with their guys that they have, but they remain largely unproven. So, again, Trevon Diggs and Tito held up okay against the Rams, but, again, they don't have the firepower in L.A., at least the big-time receivers in L.A., that Falcons now with Julio Jones, so this will be a huge test for those cornerbacks.
Okay, and your specialists, how are the kicker, the kicker situation, punter situation, and returner situations for the Cowboys?
Well, let's just start at returner. Tony Paul doing kickoffs, an exciting rookie, CeeDee Lamb, slot receiver, number one pick from Oklahoma, was going to be the main kick punt returner. He had a huge 20-yard return in the opener, and he's a joy to watch. He's a joystick out there on the football field, and he's a big play waiting to happen, so he could have give them some juice on punt returns. Kirk Jones, he had a tough year last year, mainly because of injuries. He looks to be in good shape. He had a good game against the Rams. He bounced back. He's ready to go. He had another booming punts against the Rams. And the kicker, Greg Zerline, Greg the Leg, only missed one kick in training camp. One kick in training camp for 60 yards. But against the Rams, he had missed a 53-yarder, which was huge. I mean, they lost the game by 3 points. But outside of that, he did make another field goal. He is ready to bounce back after having a slow, tough year last year, also due to injuries. He's in Dallas with John Fossil, his former special teams coach with the Rams. The Cowboys expect him to be one of the top kickers in the league, especially kicking indoors in AT&T Stadium. He should be a weapon for them, but a disappointment in game one. He missed a 53-yarder. Also, the Cowboys didn't give an opportunity to tie the game in the fourth quarter, shutting a game-tying field goal from the 11-yard line on fourth down, and they ultimately failed.
Yeah, man, really appreciate it. Yeah, the Falcons, they were 0-for-4 on fourth downs, too. They everybody's trying to go for it now, paying homage to saying it's not analytics, but and then trying to lean on analytics for explaining their decisions. So that was interesting to watch. We got two teams trying to be bold is what the Falcons said they were trying to do. But if you're going for it on fourth down, you better, have the right play. And look like Mike Magic Mike McCarthy, who, you know, I covered the Packers when he was up there for a little bit. And, you know, when he was assistant coach, his first stint under Ray Rhodes' staff, not as the head guy. But yeah, so we'll see how the fourth down shake out on Sunday in Arlington. With that, Clarence, I thank you for stopping by. This, I think, is going to be the 210th episode of the Bowtie Chronicles podcast. Thanks, Claire.
Congratulations on your success, Hall of Fame voter, former PFWA president, and longtime NFL beat writer, man. Thank you, man. And I would say I look forward to seeing you at the game, but you're not going to be here because of COVID-19.
Yeah, we're going to miss this trip, but, you know, we'll see you soon.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right. All right, there he is, Clarence Hill, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, stopping by to help us break down the Cowboys. Just a couple things. Want to look at some of looked up the Falcons who got away and what they did for their new teams. They couldn't pay Austin Hooper. He went to Cleveland. Two catches for 15 yards, played 56 to 73 snaps in that 38-6 loss to the Ravens. So he didn't get off to a good start. Devondre Campbell got off to a great start. He was the second leading tackler for the Arizona Cardinals in their upset over the San Francisco 49ers. He had 7 tackles, and Buda Baker had 15, though. So Buda Baker went out there to earn that money he just got. Desmond Trufant, Falcons missed him because if they had been able to keep him, Isaiah Oliver might not have been on the field there. So, but he, Desmond, is wearing number 23 with the Detroit Lions. And they blew a big lead. Devondre Swift, the former Georgia back, dropped the ball on the pass, Stafford pass. But they lost 23-27. True had 2 tackles in that game and played 48 out of 65 snaps, 74. And then Devontae Freeman, chosen from 4 teams, he told Josina Anderson through his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, and so we'll keep an eye on that. He hasn't been signed. Money's been an issue in other negotiations, so we don't know if he's ready to play at the price that teams are going to be willing to pay. But we saw Clowney go in. Maybe Freeman, Drew can get Freeman a deal that he likes. So just wrapping up Claire and stuff with the Cowboys. A great interview there. Great insight to the team. We should have that. You know, it's Zeke and the wideouts. The line sounds a little shaky on the right side with trying to replace Collins. So we'll see if that'll be Fowler going against an undrafted rookie. So that should be that's a mismatch. So we should see how that works out. But, yeah, Mike Nolan is the defensive coordinator there. Former, we'll be seeing Coach Smith's hybrid 4-3, 3-4, sliding 3-4 defense as the Cowboys are trying to play. Alden Smith, troubled young man, has found the right road. Heard a little bit about it on the TV broadcast about his grandmother telling him not to waste the gifts that God has given him. And, you know, he's trying to do that and put his apparently put his life back together. He hadn't been playing since 2015. So they have him, Everson Griffin from the Vikings, and DeMarcus Lawrence. And I think they're still trying to work back in Randy Gregory. So, you know, they have some pass rushers in Dallas, and they weren't able to get after the Rams, but, you know, that's always a problem. We want to see how the Falcons line will hold up. Coach Dan Quinn made it a point to say, hey, I wanted to see if the line could hold up when the other team knows that we're passing. And he felt that they did do that in the opener on Sunday against Seattle. But Seattle didn't have Alden Smith, DeMarcus Lawrence, and Everson Griffith. I mean, they got Benson Mayoya, Bruce Irvin, and you know, a couple other cats. But, you know, there wasn't no door. Nobody was blocking DeMarcus Lawrence last week. Nobody was blocking Everson Griffin. Nobody was trying to block Alden Smith.
But maybe that built their confidence up too. So we'll see with that. McCarthy, Coach Magic Mike, 135-85-2, 10-8 in the postseason with a Super Bowl win. You know, this is kind of a coaching battle. You know, if something were to happen last season, McCarthy was going to be the best coaching candidate out there on the market. And I don't think the Falcons were enamored with that, so they stayed with Coach Dan Quinn. And, you know, because it would have been more of the same. It would have been going back to basically Coach Smith and his staff and Nolan, because all these guys, Nolan, Jim Tomasula, Philbin, that's the old Green Bay, San Francisco mafia, coaching mafia, and they put it back together in Dallas right now. So, you know, you got Joe Philbin, Jim Tomasula, Mike Nolan, all these former head coaches retreading it down in Dallas. And special teams coach John Fossil. Leon Letts on the staff as assistant line coach. You know, the old timers remember him blocking for Emmitt Smith. And kind of strangely, McCarthy kept Kellen Winslow as the offensive coordinator because of his relationship with Dak Prescott, the quarterback. So one of the other storylines will be Ezekiel Elliott and Foye Olukon. We got a story up on AJC.com about their relationship in suburban St. Louis at John Burroughs High. I know Zeke played growing up in the city at Matthew Dickey Bulldogs. That was the first team I played for as a 7-year-old. Played some guard and defensive tackle, and then eventually moved out to tight end and defensive end the next year for the Royal Knights. So I played a lot of Little League ball in St. Louis, and Matthew Dickey's a great program. They've done a lot of work with a lot of kids in the city there, and Ezekiel Elliott is one of the alums, along with yours truly, dear Linda Ledbetter. I didn't go on to the NFL, but the discipline you learn in youth football, you can take it into the classroom, and a lot of people have done that, and I think we did that too. But hey, we're going to wrap here. I'm going to go to Dirk Cutter, 0-for-4 on fourth downs. That's not how you want to do it. He's only taking credit for 0-for-3 because the special teams, Coach Kyle Weekes got 0-for-1 on the fumbled run by Sherrod Neesman. Everybody saying, don't give the rock to the D-back. That's like, don't have the D-back carry in the mail. But let's hear from Dirk Cutter, and then we're going to wrap it up in this 211th episode of the Bowtie Chronicles podcast. Here's Dirk.
So, you know, I'm going to always be questioning myself on every single play that's not successful. So, you know, you're either going to blame the play caller or you're going to blame the execution. That's up to you when you look at it.
Being bold, he said you all wanted to be bold in that situation. Y'all going to still stick to that. Are you fine with that? And then I wanted to talk about the running back breakdown with Gurley, Ito, and Hill.
Yeah, well, the analytics, everybody's on the big analytic kick, and the analytics definitely are telling you to go for it. So the numbers say go, and you know, you gotta, if you're gonna buy into that, you're gonna, you know, when you're right, you're gonna look good, and when you're wrong and you don't get it, you're not gonna look good. And that's why for years and years and years people didn't go for it on fourth down, and now they say that you should. And if you play that out over the whole season, you know, the percentages say they'll work out in your favor. But you know, last night or yesterday afternoon, being 0-for-3, they didn't work out in our favor. So that's I'm sure we're still going to do it, and yeah, I am fine with it. We have to plan it better and execute it better. And as far as the running backs go, by the time after that first series in the third quarter, when we went 3 and out, and then they went down and scored, we got the ball back with 5 minutes in the third quarter, and we were down 16 points. You know, you don't have very many possessions left at that point, so the total game plan changed. I thought we mixed the run and pass really well in the first half, and you know, Todd got the majority of his carries in the first half. I think he only had two or three in the second half. We didn't run it hardly at all. That's all we ran it in the second half. So, you know, the breakdown as far as the plays, you know, when you're trying to play three backs, that's probably about what we expected. And we just like to be able to stay with our game plan as far as mixing the run and the pass longer than we did, but time and score dictated that we go the other way late in the third quarter.
There is Dirk Koetter breaking down the you know, they had to get away from the run. They played the game. They played a half. That was good. That was good to see them put together a half. And in the third quarter, went sideways. Once they gave up the bomb and then fumbled on the next possession, you know, it went downhill. So somebody on the sideline, when they get, you know, kicked in the stomach on that bomb, they got to say, hey, let's go get them. We got to go hit these guys back in the mouth. And the offense can't go out there and put them in a spot where they got to go for a fake punt to stay on the field. And then, you know, now you give up a short field and boom, you're down. So, you know, I like them going for it, but, you know, they shouldn't have to, you know, wait the fourth down. Handle that on first, second, and third down. So, you know, they did. That was pretty good. I thought, you know, your whole goal is to put together a whole game. Okay. They put together a good half. 14-12, they're battling, you know, you straighten out the problems, then, you know, make adjustments so you're getting touchdowns, not field goals. You know, they were there. So I thought it was, I mean, I'm not killing them after going 0-1 on this one. Didn't like the fact that they got blown out, but they were playing for a half. So they got put together a whole game, and not having any exhibition games might have been a part of that. We'll see where they're at after four games. I don't really want to judge them until I get four games in, because we'll see if they're able to put together a game at that point, because, you know, that's their exhibition schedule, really. They don't really have time to wait four games. Like Todd Gurley said, we can't fall behind in this league, so they got to try to put it together pretty fast. And they'll try that in Dallas. So you can follow us on AJC.com. Shout out to my man Jason Butt and NBA writer Sarah Spencer, one of my former students at Georgia. They'll be covering the team this week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I have to go to St. Louis for a funeral for my Uncle Benjamin Ledbetter, my dad's brother. My dad's the oldest. Uncle Benny's the second. He's a former military man, police fireman in St. Louis, one of the first blacks on the St. Louis Fire Department. I think he went up to captain at two there. He also the owner of the Lead Smokehouse Barbecue restaurant on Grand Avenue for a long time. I would always stop in there and get me some rib tips on my way to my dad's house. And then he also owned the Speakeasy. I didn't frequent that lounge over there on Florissant Avenue, but if I need to see Uncle Benny, he always had a little stack of cash and always broke his favorite nephew off. So going to pay my respects to him. And Jason and Sarah have the coverage holding it down for us this week, and I'll be back on Friday and get ready for the game on Sunday. So with that, we're going to get out of here. You know, you can always follow us on Twitter at DOrlandoAJC. We got to catch up to Clarence. He's got more followers than us, so we need to work on that. Y'all need to go ahead and get on Twitter and handle that for us. Also, AJC.com, you can bookmark the Falcons page and our Facebook page, Atlanta Falcons News Now. Everything goes out on all those channels, and we appreciate you stopping by to enjoy the coverage. With that, we're going to wrap it up here with the 211th. I said 10 when I was talking to Clarence, but it's 211th episode of the Bowtie Chronicles podcast. Everything you need to know about the Atlanta Falcons. Music by DJ Magic.
Hip-hop is a product of black people. It's a product of black song and celebration.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution presents
hip-hop's most pulled elements are pulled from the South.
A Southern hip-hop story.
We always go back to that moment of the Source Awards.
Everybody wants your rhythm, but they don't want your blues.
The biggest names in hip-hop.
Atlanta is still the mecca for hip-hop.
50 years.
No one can deny.
One film.
The power of the South now.
The South got something to say. Streaming now at ajc.com/hip-hop.
The AJC's trusted veteran political voices, Greg Bluestein, Patricia Murphy, Tia Mitchell, and Bill Nigut are the essential source for Georgia politics. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Politically Georgia. Sign up for the newsletter, download the podcast, subscribe to the AJC.